It's time to experience the Synergy Connection Show with your host, Lucy Forsting.
Welcome back to the Synergy Connection Show. I have with me today Carla Royal, and she has her master's degree in education and is a master certified coach. Her background is in psychology, and she works with high-achieving, high-performance people who are quietly struggling with anxiety. And I think in today's world, probably there's a lot of people that are out there struggling with anxiety between our presidential elections coming up and, of course, now the coronavirus. And who knows how long that's going to be around. So why don't you let the listeners out there know a little bit more about you and how they can find you if after this hour they go, man, I need to go talk to Carla.
Thank you, Lucy. It's really good to be here. I'm a professional life and business coach, and I've been doing this kind of work as a therapist or as a coach since 1990. And I found that there's a theme through all of my clients throughout these years of anxiety. And they don't always present with the anxiety. I think that's happening more now as I'm really focusing on anxiety. But these are people who are very successful. They're doing very well out there. But internally, their mind is going crazy. They're spinning out. You know, some people call it monkey mind.
Right. Is it kind of a, I mean, this is something that I saw when I was still doing my personal practice. But it's almost like with the Packer players that I worked with, they knew that an injury would take away that six-figure income in a heartbeat.
Right.
And they didn't have any other skills.
Yeah.
And so is it sort of along those lines, like they achieve a certain success level and they know that it could be taken away by somebody saying you're fired or somebody saying, you know, there's no more money for this grant, or how does that work for you?
Well, I think there can be so many, many reasons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of my most recent clients called me because he has about 4 years ago, he came from no money and he made $22 million in 1 year.
Holy cow. What was he doing?
And he called me. I think he's an internet marketer.
Okay.
So he called me because he freaked out. So all his life, he thought if I just had enough money, everything's going to be okay.
Yeah.
He got the money and he freaked out. And this was about 4 years ago. So it's been a while before
uh-huh.
he called me.
Uh-huh.
And he's done all kinds of things. But what he discovered was he just had so many more balls in the air. It didn't take care of his sense of well-being
uh-huh.
to have all of that money. In fact, it added all kinds of more problems to his life.
Because he had to manage it?
He had to manage it. And uh-huh. so what we're discovering is he created all of these stories in his mind
uh-huh.
about this money, about what it was to have it, about who he should be, about imposter syndrome, for example.
Uh-huh.
I find a lot of my successful people have what is commonly known as imposter syndrome, which is,
I'm not really who this is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do I really deserve this?
Right.
Should I really, you know, and I too, as a coach, have experienced that where, and as a therapist, like, really, who am I to be sitting here trying to help people? You know, it's and
right.
you can kind of have some of those stories
uh-huh.
that really start messing with your mind. And part of the work that I do is I think that people basically have two problems. One is they don't know who they really are
uh-huh.
at their essence.
Uh-huh. And how do people actually discover that? Because that's like a lifelong journey to try to figure out, I'm not the kid, you know, that I was when I was five starting
mm-hmm.
school. I'm not the high school student I once was. I'm not the college student. I'm not this. I'm not that.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you discover? You know?
Well, and the second problem, which I think it kind of addresses that, is that, you know, the first problem I think people have is they don't know who they are. And the second problem is they have too much on their minds.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that really, as I've transitioned from psychotherapy to coaching, which you can't tease them out completely, of
uh-huh,
course, and I'm still
uh-huh.
informed by my psychotherapy background, but
uh-huh.
but coaching is more about where you are today and where you want to go, whereas psychotherapy often is about healing background trauma and things like that, and both are so important.
Uh-huh.
But when I think about the kind of coaching I'm doing now, it's really, I think of it as sort of, I call it subtractive psychology.
Okay, explain.
And it's about taking, it's about removing all of these beliefs, all of these stories, these narratives, these expectations. It's about removing things so that we can come back to our essence.
So when you say removing, another term that I've often heard used is rewriting that narrative. You know, that somebody is living this life and that's not who they are. And so by going in and looking at their core values, they can mm-hmm. rewrite it.
Mm-hmm. I think that that's certainly one way to look at it, is that you can go in and recognize the old beliefs. For example, I come from a fundamentalist Christian background. And so one of the things I learned through that was that my heart is deceitful above all else. Now you can imagine how painful it is to go through life believing that your heart is deceitful and you can't trust it.
Okay, I want you to explain that a little bit more, because I'm thinking that there are people out there that are, you know, they're kind of going, what? You know, how can your heart deceive you?
Well, this was just what the church taught. There's some scripture, and I can't remember it now, but I think the scripture is your heart is deceitful above all else, and I can't remember how that, we'd have to look that verse up.
Okay.
But I was taught that I can't trust myself.
You can't trust your heart.
That's what I was taught, that I can't trust myself, my uh-huh. heart, my uh-huh. myself, my intuition, my gut.
So who did you trust?
You had to trust the scriptures.
Wow.
And God.
But God is...
God as identified through this particular belief system of fundamentalist Christianity.
So that would be very restrictive.
Incredibly restrictive. And so for me, part of it has been dismantling some of those beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
That's
so now
what I mean.
Do you trust your heart?
Yes. And not always.
Not always?
Not always,
okay.
but mostly I do. You know.
So how do you get in touch? Like, one of the things I've talked about on this show is, and I haven't shown it to you, which I didn't know we were going to go down this road, otherwise I might have. Are you familiar with the HeartMath Institute?
Yes.
Okay, so I have what's called an inner balance device, which when you wear it, puts you back in touch with heart coherence.
Yes.
And when you're in heart coherence, certainly you can trust your heart, because your heart is actually what does lead you
right
down the right road. So interesting that there would be such a restriction. I'm trying to figure out where that restriction came from. You know, that a church would teach that you can't trust it because it will lead you wrong. So I'm thinking, you know, if your heart was saying, yes, you love this person, then the church would say, no, not unless it meets these parameters?
Yeah, I mean, gosh, I don't know how deep into this we want to go or how personal we want to get with this, but... I didn't come in here thinking about the fundamentalist church. It was just such a great example, and
right.
I know that at least in the Southeast, which is where I'm from, that's the Bible Belt, and
mm-hmm.
so I know that a lot of people would know exactly what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I have a client in California when this came up, and he had no idea what I meant by fundamentalist Christian. So,
mm-hmm.
but that really rigid black and white. Kind of belief system,
mm-hmm.
which leads you to, you know.
So then you doubt your heart.
You doubt yourself. You doubt your heart. You doubt.
So unless it's coming out of Scripture,
as this particular group
understands
Scripture.
Right. So did they rewrite it?
Did they rewrite what?
Scripture. I mean, or do they just interpret
it's just a certain type of interpretation.
Okay.
So it would be interesting to understand where all that came from.
Really?
But so for me as a coach now, I really help people understand how the mind works,
mm-hmm.
and I help them take things off their minds so that they have more clarity and more access to their own innate wisdom and resourcefulness and resilience. It's not that we ever don't have that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that sometimes you could think of it as a snow globe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a beautiful scene in this snow globe. And then when you shake this snow globe up,
you can't see it.
You can't see it.
Right.
And so what a lot of people do, metaphorically, is they keep shaking it, trying to, where's my scene? Where's my scene? When really what needs to happen is they need to put that snow globe down and let it come back to a place of clarity. And that's
mm-hmm.
where they will find their true essence.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's really about helping people take things off of their mind.
So somebody who, let's go back to the person that you said was so successful and realized he'd made $22 million,
mm-hmm.
and now he was living that maybe false persona because he didn't even know what to do. He mm-hmm. was managing everything.
Mm-hmm.
So with him, he had a lot of balls in the air. And then how did you maybe begin to help him get clarity
mm-hmm.
so that the snow globe wasn't covering up his true essence?
Right, yes. One of the things I love to do with people, a little simple exercise that anybody can do, that I do when I'm caught in a thought storm, I might call it. When I'm caught in a thought storm, which happens, I go down that rabbit hole.
Mm-hmm.
I do a little diagram with myself and with my clients to help me wake up to what I'm doing. So it's really about waking up to ourselves. So the little diagram, I call it exponential thinking. You can think of thinking upon thinking upon thinking upon thinking. So I'll take this as an example. Driving over here, I felt a little nervous because this is new.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt the anxiety in my body. I felt a little bit of shaking, right? So in the past, not knowing what I know today, if I started feeling that anxiety, I might tell myself, there's a problem here. I have a problem. I'm feeling anxious. That's a problem. So that's adding some thinking upon these physical sensations I might be experiencing. I've got a problem. What's the problem? The problem is that I don't really know what I'm doing. I'm an imposter.
Uh-huh.
Or what if I don't hit it out of the park? Or what uh-huh. if Lucy doesn't like me and never invites me back? Or, now you see how I'm
uh-huh.
adding thinking
sure.
upon thinking.
Sure.
I'm really creating these stories, and I'm adding thinking upon thinking upon thinking. As I do that, I become more and more stressed. I become more and more anxious because I'm adding this exponential thinking until there comes a tipping point almost that it's out of control now. And it has me. I'm no longer having my emotions, but my emotions are having me now.
Mm-hmm.
In the car today, though, I recognize, oh, I'm feeling a little nervous. Okay, I'm just going to label it anxiety. I'm just going to label it nervous. And just that simple labeling just gives me some acknowledgement, some validation,
mm-hmm.
and then I just don't go down that path of stories.
Mm-hmm.
So how I do this with a diagram is you could put it, let's make it simple since we don't have a visual. You could take a fact of something and put it inside of a circle, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So let's say that that I walk in today and you're curt with me. You're just not your pleasant, warm self. You're just a little bit. You're just kind of cut to the chase. You're curt. Let's say your boss walks into your office and he or she is really curt with you. What do you do? So you put inside that diagram, boss is curt, or Lucy is curt. Now outside of that line, you start filling out your stories. Oh my gosh, Lucy really regrets inviting me on this show. Or my boss is mad at me for something and I don't know what. Or, oh my God, they've been making cuts at work and they're gonna fire me.
Uh-huh.
And how am I gonna go home and tell my spouse? And oh my God, I'm not gonna, you know, now I don't sleep tonight. So you write out all the stories outside of that. And now when you look at that diagram, you see that all of that is unmanageable. It's
uh-huh.
overwhelming.
Uh-huh.
I can't deal with all of that. But when I bring my attention back to the actual fact, Lucy is curt, which you weren't, by the way, then when I drop all the stories about it, then I can just be really present to Lucy is curt or boss is curt.
Right.
And then I can just open my heart then
right.
and be present.
Right.
Because it may be that what comes up for me in that moment when I'm not freaking out about why you're mad at me, which is a story,
mm-hmm.
then I can go, oh my gosh, I wonder what's going on with Lucy. I wonder if she's okay. Maybe I'll ask her.
You know, it's funny that you bring that one up as a interesting story, because yesterday I had a lady actually who had called in. And as a psychotherapist, you know, you and I both are very much in tune with somebody's voice, body language, all of those kind of things.
Yeah.
So she was on the phone, and, you know, my position yesterday was to help guide her a little bit. But she was just not having any of it. She was very, very upset, and she wanted to speak with, an individual who wasn't available for her to speak to. And so at the end, you know, I just let her vent, you mm-hmm. know, because she needed to be able to process whatever was going on. And so I just let her do it. Later, she ended up calling back, and she didn't get me. She got, you know, another individual. But she called back to apologize. And it turned out that in her particular case, there were some health issues with her mother, and she was, you know, probably highly anxious, didn't know which way to turn, you know, needed some answers, couldn't get exactly the answers that she wanted from the person that she wanted to speak with.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you know, it was a horrible scenario for her. But, you know, I understood that, and so it was easier just to mm-hmm. listen. And when she got ready to hang up, she hung up, and then she thought about it later, and I guess, you know, felt very sad that she had handled it in the mm-hmm. way she handled mm-hmm. it. So, yeah, I mean, you know, doing that little exercise of not labeling everything so that it's your fault.
And yeah, or their fault, because uh-huh. we can do that too. He's a jerk, or she's a jerk, or uh-huh. what, you know, and then, or we can get other people to collude with us. If you remember, uh-huh. Lucy was just a jerk today. I can't believe, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, blah, 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 you know, and
right.
then we go down this rabbit hole that
right.
we get all this. Yeah, but you were able to just maintain your presence and be open. You didn't take it personally. You didn't tell a story about it.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't project into the future about it,
mm-hmm.
you know, about what could happen or what this could mean. You just stayed right there in the present moment.
Right.
So that's partly what I help my clients do, is to get back into the present moment, because that's, we're built for the reality of this present moment. It's like we are not built for future moments.
Well, you can't be there.
You can't be there.
Right.
You can't be there.
And you really can't go, you know, back into your past and fix anything.
That's
all you
right.
do have is the now.
Well, that reminds me of an Eckhart Tolle quote.
Mm-hmm.
He says, unease, anxiety, tension, stress, worry, all forms of fear are caused by too much future and not enough presence. Guilt, regret, resentment, grievances, sadness, bitterness, and all forms of unforgiveness are caused by too much past. So it's when we aren't centered in this moment. You could think of being in a, I used to canoe, and I love to canoe by myself. If you canoe by yourself, you really must sit in the center of the canoe,
uh-huh.
or you're not going to be balanced. And it's the same in life. If you're living in the past or you're living in the future, then you're not going to be balanced. So my client that made the $22 million, he was projecting way into the future about how was he going to maintain this? How was he going to keep this going? How was he going to not burn out? How was he, you know, so he's living in a future that has not come to pass.
Right.
And of course he can't sleep. Of course he becomes OCD. Of course he became suicidal even.
Really?
Yes.
Because he just didn't think he could keep all the balls in the air?
Just that, and it wasn't just the balls in the air, it was just, who am I to be this successful?
Mm-hmm.
And what happens if I lose this? And all kinds of stories.
So did he go about rewriting maybe his narrative as to who you were then is not who you are today?
Well, he did all kinds of things between the time that sort of, if you will, in my words, these are not his words, breakdown,
mm-hmm.
To the time that he called me. By the time he called me, he had figured out a few things and had calmed down. But the piece that he was stuck with right now is that I am terrified to go forward in my business all out because I'm afraid this is going to happen again. So you see, now he's living in the past of, I'm terrified this is going to happen again.
You mean like being successful again?
No, having the breakdown again.
Oh, I see.
Having
okay.
the
All
suicidal
right.
thoughts, having okay. the depression, having that extreme anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
He was terrified that if he really, because he's kind of pulled back from his business some,
mm-hmm.
and so it's not going as well as he wants it to go. But he's afraid to go all in. So one of the things that had a huge impact on him in one of our recent sessions was I explained to him he couldn't see how he has, and we all do, you and I do, and everybody listening does, everybody, I'm almost 60, I have a a 100% survival rate up until this point. And I said to him, you have a 100% survival rate up to now. You figured out how to move through this in your wisdom. You figured out how to come to a new place with this. And he was shocked. He thought he had done this to himself and that he might do this to himself again. But in fact, he found his way out by getting support, by getting help. His wisdom allowed him to make those calls, to do some other things that he did. And so he has 100% survival rate. And that brought him back into the present moment again. That brought him back into the present because he's been so worried that this is going to happen again. Does that make sense?
It does. I'm also thinking that some of this, I don't know whether you do this with your clients or not, but did you kind of help him understand that his inner wisdom, because you've used that word, is also something that he has access to 24/7? You know, if he simply gets into the place where he can hear it.
Yes, and that's what we work on. That's absolutely what we work on, is I help teach people how to put down that snow globe, you know, so that it can clear and he can see, he can find his wisdom again. So that's one of the things that is, I mean, largely, I told him, I spoke with him yesterday, I said, largely, my job is to help you remember who you are. You know, largely, that's my job, is to help you remember who you truly are.
So one of my guests in the past, she's a person that channels angels. She has angelic qualities to do that with. And she has said that we are all like baby angels here on Earth, that we forget who we are, that part of why we're here is to learn how to play, not to take life so seriously, because we become our own worst enemies as a result of the monkey brain that continues to chatter away that, you know, you didn't do this right and you didn't do this right. And, you know, mom only loved you when you did this and dad only approved of you when you did this. And we carry that collective conscience with us into our adult life, giving it importance, you know, when in reality, it's just the interpretation that we gave it.
Yeah, I think that if you look at little children, very little children, very little children, you know, they are just raw, like beautifully, beautifully, perfectly raw. They're like, if they feel happy, they are just all out happy. If they feel sad, they're all out sad. But what you notice is, you know, they're creative, they're loving, they're curious. They have all the, this innate, they have an innate wisdom. You know, they don't, we don't sit there and say, now here's how you walk. You we're going to pull you up and now you're going to put this. No, they just start experimenting. They just start pulling themselves up and they fall down. They don't take that so seriously that they fall down. Right. We as adults now, but they fall down. They don't take it so seriously. They get back up. They get angry. They don't hold on to it. It just moves through them. And I believe that our psychological system is very much, well, very much like our physical system, which is that when we get cut, our body just goes to work to bring us back to equilibrium. It just goes to work to heal. You know, we might tend that cut, we might cover that cut, but then we leave that cut alone and it heals. We don't do the healing. I think our psychological system is very much the same, that our emotional, our psychological system just wants to come back into equilibrium. And when we just sort of give it a little bit of tender care, a little bit of support, it will do that on its own, like a cut. So if the truth is, at my essence and at your essence, we are not broken. We can never be broken, which I used to believe as a psychotherapist, by the way, that you could be broken. I don't believe that anymore.
So what did you think broke people in the past?
Trauma, you know, trauma, basically.
So emotional, physical, mental, some sort of trauma.
Yes.
That they literally had to maybe even use medication to begin to heal from.
Yeah, but I didn't know that at their essence, you can never be broken. Sure, you can be sad, you can be down, your body can be traumatized, you can have a damaged body, but you, at your essence, I believe, can't be damaged. Which was another message at the Fundamentalist Christian Church I got, was that you're born a sinner, And
so you were born damaged.
You're born damaged. Wow. Basically. Yeah. Okay. So that was another the messages I had to
so to look at a little baby that's just a couple of days old, yeah, and think that it's a sinner.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Now there are other verses in the Bible that say you are wonderfully and fearfully made. Mm-hmm. You know, so there are other verses that contradict that, but a big message was that. So yeah, so back to the little kid, they have all of this, but then you have parents or culture or religion coming in and going, wait a minute, that little temper tantrum is not okay. You mm-hmm. need to start shutting that down. So kids start to learn that they can't fully have their emotions, and that they have to shut down their emotions.
Well, I'm thinking the messages even that are based on, you know, our sexuality. So if we are little boys, you can't cry because right. that shows weakness.
That's right.
If you're a little girl, you know, it's more okay to show your emotions if you're sad or depressed.
Right. Right.
But boys have to be tough.
Right.
So they get those messages early on.
They do. And then as adults, you know, we women ask our men, those of us who are with men, we ask them to be strong and to be sensitive. And they're like, well, wait a minute.
How do I do both?
How do I do both? So right. there are these expectations. So again, it's about, and this is one of the things, I don't know why I'm pointing at that crystal.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I love this crystal. I wish our audience could see this gorgeous crystal. You know, one of the things with this young man that I'm working with, he's dealing with all of that. Mm-hmm. Like he's in a field where these wealthy men, you know, can have anything they want and do anything they want and be any way they want. And there's a lot of superficiality, and he's got a tremendous amount of depth. He's trying to figure out how all that works in that world.
Right.
You know, which is another anxiety producing thing.
You know, I'm going to walk down a slightly different path here with you, but the thought has just occurred to me that for people that are highly successful, okay, so a lot of them feel like they have to drive a certain kind of car mm-hmm. to show their success. They have to dress a certain way. They have to dine out at certain kinds of restaurants. They have to take expensive trips. You know, you can kind of go with this.
Yeah.
So, but they're not in touch with their feelings anymore.
Right.
You know, because the facade is there
yeah.
and they hide behind the facade.
Yes.
And so if they get into a situation where a great many men by the time they're 60 are on blood pressure medication,
right.
which then affects their potency as a male.
Right.
And so now they just want to be held. Yeah. They just want to be comforted. But they can't do that because that doesn't fit that image.
Right, right. Well, these are the things that my young, and he's a young guy,
mm-hmm.
is are dealing with in some ways. And it's about taking that facade down.
So that has got to be so scary, though, for him at his age.
Oh, my God, he's so brave.
Is he?
Oh, my gosh, he's so brave, and he has so much self-awareness. I just adore him.
Mm.
And because he's willing to look.
Mm-hmm.
He's willing to look. He's willing to see through the facade. But
he knows where it comes from.
He does. I think he does.
Mm-hmm.
And he can see. And he knows he does not want to burn out.
Mm-hmm.
He does not want to become, he doesn't want to be this superficial guy. He wants heart and soul. He wants to follow that.
I know you said he's in internet, but is he able to maybe take some of the money that he has made and put it into things that are heart and soul that he can actually get invested in?
He absolutely, he invests in coaches and
okay.
all kinds of healing modalities, and he understands the power of investing in himself
mm-hmm.
in
and
that
maybe
way.
Investing in others, because I mean he's in a position where, you know, he can become an example
mm-hmm.
to younger men that are you know, maybe high school, maybe even middle school,
mm-hmm.
that don't have that
mm-hmm.
foundation
mm-hmm.
behind them of a dad who believed in them or a mom who encouraged. I always have to chuckle, and I know you've seen this, but I'm a football fan, you know, so when you're along the sidelines, you know, with the cameras and everything, they never go, "Hi, Dad." It's always, "Hi, Mom."
Uh-huh.
And so a lot of them didn't have the father figure in their life who was there saying, "Yes, you can." It was the mom,
right.
you know, who was there
right.
saying, "Yes, you can."
Right. Yeah, it's not okay for men to be... I think it's becoming more acceptable, but it's still really difficult. One of the reasons I love working with high-achieving, high-performance people is because I want them to know that they can be successful and have peace of mind and be connected to their soul and to their heart, and that they can live from a place of more groundedness. That's why I love working with these kind of people. Is I think that so many.
What's your youngest success? Maybe it's this particular person.
No, my youngest is an attorney in her first job. In her first job as an attorney, she came to me with, she had been diagnosed with an anxiety disorder when she was 13, and she, it terrified her. Very smart, very quick, very, very special.
Did she
woman.
Think she was having heart problems?
No, not at 13. I don't think she did. She never has mentioned that. But she just was terrified by her anxiety. And so she thought that if she could do extraordinarily well in college and then go on and get her JD and do extremely well, and that what she did, and then get a plum job, that her anxiety would go away.
And
so
it
all happened. She got all that, and her anxiety didn't go away. And she was freaked out, and she called me.
Yeah.
And oh my gosh, we're done at this point. She'll be back, she says, but she's doing so well. She started to understand how she was running this exponential thinking, these stories, these narratives about the future that just weren't happening. So, for example, she was terrified to speak up with her boss because she would get anxious and her voice would change. It might crack a little bit.
Quiver.
She was terrified that he would see that. A lot of my clients have physical anxiety symptoms that are difficult can be difficult to manage. So she was afraid if her voice, she told herself a story, if my voice cracks, he's going to think that I'm not capable.
Right.
I'm not accomplished.
Right.
So what was really in her way were these stories. And so what we did was we talked about, we dismantled those stories. We dismantled those stories. And the truth is we have no idea what he's going to think if her voice cracks. Something up about what he's going to think. He could just easily be thinking, oh, isn't this wonderful? She's new and she's fresh. And I love working with these young people who don't have the confidence yet because... I mean, he might be really excited.
Somebody he could mentor.
We don't know.
Right.
The truth is that if... One of the things I say is live it once. So, for example, I have a client who was telling me that she was just so worried about going home. She was feeling angry. She was feeling stressed about going home for Thanksgiving.
Okay.
This is a high-powered consultant woman. Confidence out the wazoo. And here she is trembling about going home because she was afraid she had gained some weight. She was afraid that when she opened the door, her mother saw her, that her mother was just going to say, oh my gosh, I can't believe how much weight you've lost. I mean, gained.
Gained.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I can't believe you're kind of letting yourself go. So I said, wow, you're telling yourself an awfully painful story and you're living it right now as if it's happening. She may not do that. But the point we got, and she was able to recognize that, she dropped all of her stories, she went home, opened the door, and her mom just embraced her and loved her and never said a word. But if she had held on to that story that my mom is going to reject me and be critical because she's done it in the past,
right. She would have created it.
She would have gone in with her energy very closed, very suspect, defensive, and her mom may have had a very different reaction.
Right.
But the truth is, her mom might have been critical anyway, but if she had been, live it once instead of a thousand times before you get there. You know, the worst may happen, but live it once when you have access to all your resourcefulness and resilience and wisdom because you haven't depleted it through worrying.
So did you kind of coach her, like, with that live it once philosophy? Did you kind of walk her through a scenario, what if? And let's see how you want to approach this if mom does say something.
You know, we in this particular case didn't go down that, but I have gone down that path with
because
people.
Because I would think it would give them the confidence to know what they would say.
Yeah. Well, for her, what happened was she just woke up to her stories, and she woke up to herself, and in waking up to herself, she was grounded. And she had all the confidence she needed.
Okay, so she would have known how to respond if mom
had. Yes, and I think that's what I was saying earlier about we're built for the reality of this present moment. Mm-hmm. It's like we have what we need for whatever is in this moment and not for this future scenario. You know, and you can think of conversations that you rehearse about in your mind over and over and over again when you're getting ready to have a difficult, a potentially challenging meeting. So you rehearse and you get more and more anxious and more and more anxious and more and more anxious. No, and I might have coached my younger client to say, no, instead of rehearsing that, because that's what she was, a rehearser, a conversation rehearser, and it escalated her anxiety. I was like, no, you know what? Write down your 3 bullet points. It's sort of like what you said to me. You don't have to come in here with a ream of papers do this show. Uh-uh. Just come in with a couple of ideas and we're going to talk. Mm-hmm. And I know we can just trust our wisdom to be present, that what needs to be said will be said.
Right, exactly.
And so that's what I help my clients. It's like, you can have your 3-point outline. Mm-hmm. Sure. I've got a couple notes here.
Mm-hmm. And I think that is such a neat way to actually approach life, is that you don't have to have all the knowledge in the world, because if you do trust that you're going to be given the resources at the time, you know, then you're open to it. You're going to be able to channel it, if you will. And I know there's a lot of things, including the book I wrote. I've had several people that said, you channeled it, because I knew things that there was no way for me to know. And yet, when it came time to verify, one of the funny things that I'll share is when I was doing some of the background research of where these characters were born, I had them being born in Durham County, England, and there is a church there called St. John's Church. And I created the name St. John's. I found Durham County just on a map, and I went, oh, let's put them there because they're going to go here. There's a train that will take them. But I didn't start doing the research behind the scenes in terms of what is St. John's all about. So it turns out that these are 3 mice that represent love, truth, and wisdom. And they make these journeys out into mankind to teach. And mice only live to be 5, maybe 6 weeks old in most cases, because something is going to eat them. But of course, these are magical mice, so they live through series of books, because this is the first of a series. However, in the church they were born, what I found out is there was an actual man that made every one of the pews in that actual church, and on every pew is carved a mouse.
Wow.
And he was called Mr. Mouse Man. And you can find his, he's deceased now, but he made furniture and he put a mouse on everything, including little boxes and things that are less expensive. But every pew in this church has a little mouse on it. So the illustrator that I have is from Universal Studios. And I made sure that in the very beginning, the prequel to the book is based on why the mice decide to take these adventures to begin with. And so he did the mice underneath the feet of some of the parishioners, and it shows very clearly the mouse that's on the pew.
I
wanted, you know, people to understand that there is so much history. And how would I have, you know, how did I make the mice, you know, be born in that particular church, where I later find out that it is indeed a mouse man pew that they are underneath. So I think we have that innate ability to channel information. But again, you have to be quiet enough on the inside.
That's right.
And you have to trust that heart.
That's right.
You know, to hear those messages.
That's exactly right. It is, that wisdom is always there. Mm-hmm. And we've all experienced it when we have people talk about aha moments.
Yeah, sure.
It's like when you're trying so hard to come up with something and you just can't get it. You just can't get it. And you're trying so hard. And you just get more and more stressed out and maybe more and more confused. And then you go take a shower or you go take a walk. mm-hmm. or you go outside and sing or whatever it is, and all of a sudden, pop, mm-hmm. there it comes.
Mm-hmm.
That's when we've dropped some of that mental chatter.
Mm-hmm.
So it's true that quieting our minds, which in my mind is about not buying into the stories that I'm telling myself.
Right.
So you could think of a Facebook feed. If I click on the articles in my Facebook feed, Facebook gives me more of those articles. The mm-hmm. more I click on them, the mm-hmm. more of those articles I get.
Mm-hmm.
The less I click on them, the less of those articles I get. So
right.
you can think of thoughts in the same way. Thoughts are just moving through our minds, constantly moving through our minds. They're not a problem. It's only when we attach to one that, I mean, and it's not a problem to attach to a good thought, to
right.
a fun thought.
Right,
there's
right.
no problem. Enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
But when you attach to a painful thought and you start playing there, you start feeding it, you start seeding that thought storm, then you're going to get more storm.
You know what I'm going to relate that to, that comment right now, is where we are politically.
Uh-huh.
And the number of people that have attached really negative thoughts. They can't see anything positive about either side.
Right.
You know, so that's been the biggest issue that I've seen is that, you know, the Democrats are skewed all the way on one side
mm-hmm.
almost.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have, you know, Trump and, you know, his followers
mm-hmm.
all the way on this side.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not even looking at the middle ground,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it has to be my way or the highway kind
mm-hmm.
of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Which is tough because nobody is ever 100% right or 100%
mm-hmm,
wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That's an impossibility.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think you find that on both sides, people are creating all kinds of stories about it.
Exactly.
You know, like on the Democratic side, Trump is going to be the end of democracy is what they're saying. Well, that's projecting way out into the future.
Exactly. And if we do end up with 4 more years, how could it end, you know, all the years that have been before it.
Mm-hmm,
I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, granted there may be some repair work that needs to be done,
mm-hmm.
but nothing is everything.
Mm-hmm. And on the Republican side, it's like, you know, oh my gosh, we can't have this socialism or else blah, blah,
mm-hmm.
blah, you know, or whatever. And
right.
and there are all these stories that really keep us divided. And
mm-hmm.
and it's that.
And isn't that true of families? You
oh,
know,
yes,
I mean, if, you, if
yes.
you're in a family where, you know, it doesn't have to be politics. It can just be value systems that are not in agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have everybody in the family that's afraid to say anything
mm-hmm.
because it'll end up in a big argument.
Well, we stop seeing one another.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're seeing something that isn't us. And we're saying, if you are a Democrat, let's say I'm a Republican, if you're a Democrat, then I see Democrat. Or if you're a Republican and I'm a Democrat, I see Republican, and now I've got all these stories attached to that. Now you're not Lucy anymore.
Right.
And so I don't get Lucy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get to connect to Lucy. I'm
right.
connecting to all my stories about Democrats or Republicans.
Who you think I am.
Or family. That's right. And we become over-identified with our thoughts and our feelings, and we decide that we are our thoughts or our feelings.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell completely the difference when I'm having a feeling and when I've become my feelings.
So give me an example for somebody listening. So what would be a really good example of when you have become your feeling?
Well, I'll take driving over here today and a little bit of anxiety. That was having some feelings.
Mm-hmm.
No problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew it wasn't a problem.
Right.
But let's say in the past, I would have, I get caught up, just like everybody. I do get
caught
up.
Well, we're humans. Yeah.
We're humans. I think I wake up to it a little more quickly and don't go as far down the rabbit hole. But let's say that I bought into that anxiety and I had that exponential thinking we were talking about. Let's say I started saying, oh my gosh, I'm no good. I can't do this. I don't have anything to say. I won't be able to remember anything because when I get nervous, I go blank and Lucy's going to hate me. And now I start to become my feelings and I start to believe that my feelings are telling me something about me.
Mm-hmm.
Something about who I am. And they're not. My feelings are never telling me anything about who I am. They're telling me about my thinking. They're telling me the thoughts I'm buying into. So let's take this for an example. Let's say you know, you're having a really difficult discussion with somebody of the opposite politics of you. And it gets so frustrating, that you have this thought, I just want to slap him across the face.
Wake him up.
Yeah. Excuse me. Let's say you have that thought, I want to slap him across the face. Well, you're not going to do that. You're not going to slap him across the face. Why? Because you don't take that thought so seriously. Mm-hmm. You let that thought just move through. You don't worry about that thought. It's like a thought that we have from time to time. I just want to slap them. I mean, we just have that thought from time to time.
Right.
But if I did take that thought seriously, I want to slap you across the face, then a couple things might happen. I might slap you across the face. That's no good. Or if I took that thought seriously, I might go, my God, what is wrong with me that I have a thought like this? And then I might go down the shame hole.
Right, right.
But really, thoughts just come and go. They're neutral. And if we leave them alone, like the Facebook feed, mm-hmm. if we leave them alone, they will eventually, I can't tell you how long, sometimes a minute,
right.
sometimes a few days,
right.
they'll dissipate.
Right.
They'll just dissipate because that's what they do. That's what they do. But we always are feeling our thinking. The thoughts that we buy into, we feel those. And that's what we experience.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. One of the things, when I had to come up with my biography for the book, you know, because I had thought it would be like a simple little paragraph, but I was told no, that they wanted to have something that was much more extensive. And I don't know, for me at least, I tend to be a pretty private person, so I don't let people know all the things that I've done because I don't feel like it's that important, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that I had done right out of graduate school is there was a company that's very well known in the St. Louis area, and I had a partner at the time, and so we decided to do a program that we called the Thinker's Edge. And it was, you know, the image on the front of our brochures was Rodin's The Thinker, because we realized that in many instances when people have these thoughts, you know, it becomes a very concrete then issue. And our concept at the time was, how can we maybe reduce recidivism with minor offenders? You know, somebody who hasn't killed anybody yet and hasn't, you know, done anything too horrific. But to keep them from going down that road because of the ideas that most people have about offenders.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, okay, you did this was wrong,
mm-hmm.
therefore.
Mm-hmm.
And these were all, I mean, we were young, but these were all pretty young offenders, maybe 17, 18 years old, up to about 25. And do you remember Shawshank Redemption,
mm-hmm.
the movie?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, I mean, those guys became hardened criminal because everybody saw them
right.
as a criminal.
Right.
And so for these young offenders, you know, people were already coming up with the idea that they weren't salvageable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that whatever they had done meant
mm-hmm.
they were going to go down that road
mm-hmm.
and they would repeat,
mm-hmm.
offend
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
until they ended up committing a crime that actually put them away for 25 years.
Wow.
So, you know, that is one of those thought patterns, you know,
yes.
that if you don't change it
mm-hmm.
with somebody that's fairly young
mm-hmm.
or grab somebody who's in middle school that's already beginning to do things that will potentially put them there,
mm-hmm.
if they don't have a mom, a dad, a grandparent, you know, somebody who's invested
mm-hmm.
some time with them and said, you don't have to be this. You have choices. You have options.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I think, where we can all make a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to be, you know, being funded by a corporation like I was.
Mm-hmm.
It can be simply realizing that every little person that you touch in your life, you can give them that little nugget, you know, that says, no, you don't have to think about it this way.
Mm-hmm.
Cancer is a really good example. People that get diagnosed, you know, they can either jump into the water and say, I'm going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Or they can say, what are my options?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's part of what I do with my clients is help them understand that they are not their feelings, they are not their actions, they are not their thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
That's not who they are, because we begin to believe these things. You know, I have a client that everybody has told her, she's been to all kinds of psychiatrists and psychotherapists and her family, and everybody's told her she's just broken. She's just broken, and all she can do is mitigate it. And so when she sits across from me and I say, you are not broken. You are not broken.
Mm-hmm.
You should see the shock on her face.
Because she's always believed she
because
was.
Because she believes that.
Uh-huh.
And so she, so that, and so we've worked together for some time. I can't tell you the relief that she feels because she became identified with, I am broken. That's who I am.
So what does she say to herself today since, you know, that's no longer going to become her?
Well, she has some habits. She has some patterns that are pretty deeply, you know, it's like those what you wire together, what fires together
wires
that
together.
Neurotransmitters.
Yes.
Yeah. So we have to start leaving those patterns and habits alone.
Mm-hmm.
We know from brain science that those pathways will grow back over if we leave them alone, which is brilliant.
It is.
But you know, you do have to allow that to happen, is allow that. So she can wake up to her patterns. I help her wake up to her patterns. I help
and
her wake up to her
herself,
stories.
I would think now. You know,
she can
like,
what?
She can catch herself now. I mean, she can see that thought and go, whoops, that's who I was, and I'm not going to identify
well,
her
well, it
anymore.
Never was who I was. She can actually even say it never was who I was. I just believed it was.
Right.
And so now she can take a step back from her thoughts. So I help people get a little distance between them. And that's really what mindfulness is, isn't it?
It is. You know, with kiddos, you remember the dioramas that we used to make? Or maybe you didn't make them. You'd take a shoebox.
Oh, yes.
And
you would
create a scene inside the shoebox. And so you would look at it from here, and you could see it go off into sort of like infinity.
Yeah.
And so I used to tell people, your life is like a diorama. You know, you're here. You can look behind. We can't see what's ahead. But if you just understand that we're creating constantly, and we create with thoughts, and, you know, we can have new thoughts, and we can become whatever we want to become.
That is, I love how you said we have new thoughts. We always have access to new and fresh thought. And when we can wake up to the stories we're telling, everything can change.
In a flash.
And we can put that snow globe down and let our wisdom, you know, let the clarity return. My clients are looking for clarity. They're looking for more peace of mind. They're looking for a little more headspace. They're looking for a little bit better sleep. They're looking to be better leaders, you know, more effective leaders. And they know that they need clarity of mind to do that.
Right. So the monkey brain has to basically shut down so they can hear.
Well, they have to learn to allow the monkey mind just to move through and not get so attached to it.
So then do you help them connect with their heart then so they can hear, you know, more clearly instead of using, you know, there are people that I know today that honestly and truly they'll say to themselves, I'm crazy. You know, they kind of say it half-kiddingly.
Yeah.
But the reality is when you think that, you become that. And so you can justify.
If you buy into it, you can totally find, you can find evidence.
Right.
You know.
I wouldn't be doing this if.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
That kind of thinking. So very, very true how, and you see it at such a young age. One of the things that I think Paul and I talked about last week was the understanding of Yahweh, the word Yahweh, because it's I am translated. And so many times it's crucial that somebody understand that if they're going to use the word I am crazy, I am sad, I am angry, whatever it might be, I am sick, that they are giving such power to that one word. You know, and it's going to be very difficult then for them to leave that word. They've made it a part of their persona. It doesn't have to be. So.
Yeah, it's just, it's the over-identification with our thoughts and feelings. And and I help people get a little bit of distance between that so that those thoughts and feelings can dissipate.
Do they ever have a celebration, you know, like end-of-life celebrations, you know, where I tell people don't release balloons because the turtles will eat them and they'll get sick.
And the
sea birds. Yeah.
Yeah, so bad.
But there's other things that you can do. And do you ever have a celebration with somebody at the discovery end of this? And you know, like, wow, look at where you've come.
Absolutely. And it's one of the things I do with my clients. I collect throughout my sessions their very words about when they're having breakthroughs, and then oftentimes, I don't do this always, at the end of a coaching program, mm-hmm. I will gather those all together for them and send that to them, because they need to see, because we forget, mm-hmm. right? We forget mm-hmm. our ahas, we forget our breakthroughs. And so it's important for people to, as you say, I love that word, celebrate.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, because I mean, then we get back to celebrating, like you said, the essence of who we are.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
that is really super fun. You know, our time obviously, you know, flies.
It does fly.
And everybody who's ever a guest, you know, they come in with a certain amount of trepidation about, oh my God, an hour program. And you find out that at the end of the hour, it's just like, wow.
We need more time.
Yeah. So some final words maybe on anxiety, and then maybe some final words too about how people can find you again.
Okay. You know, for me, I think one of the keys is understanding who I am at my essence.
Mm-hmm.
As you get really in touch with who you are, a lot of the anxiety is going to just melt away. When you wake up to your stories, and you can do that, one of the ways you can do that is through that diagram that I mentioned.
So explain that one more time.
Just put the fact of whatever's happening in, mm-hmm. in a circle is mm-hmm. one way you can do it. So, for example, years ago, I went bankrupt. That's a fact. I went mm-hmm. bankrupt. Okay. Millions of people go bankrupt. Okay. Millions of people find their way through bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm.
The stories I told around that at the time, not knowing this was over 20 years ago, were things like, I'm going to be homeless. People will never respect me again. I've got to hide. I'm a loser. I'm never going to have credit again. I'm never going to have a home again. Now that became unmanageable for me. That freaked me out and I did not sleep. Now, interestingly enough, I still found my way through it. Even though I had all that exponential thinking, I still found my way through it. I have a home. I have excellent credit. You know, I have everything I want or everything I need. And so that little diagram can be a way to wake you up to your story.
Sure.
And help you come back into the present moment. And the other thing I want to tell people is that we don't have to fear our anxiety. There's a little story I'll tell real quick of Pema Chodron, who's a Buddhist nun and a writer. I love her. She was on a ship with her grandson many years ago, and he wanted to go. He was like 10 or 11. He wanted to go to the very bow, and he wanted to sort of reenact the Titanic scene.
Oh, sure.
And she said, "Grandson, my pulse is racing, and I'm beginning to sweat, and I'm feeling really... you know, all these butterflies in my stomach," because she was scared that mm-hmm. he was going to fall or whatever. Mm-hmm. But she didn't say, "I'm feeling anxious." She just described the physical sensations. And he outstretched his arm and he said, "Grandmother, I feel the same things." He was feeling excitement.
Sure.
His story was excitement. Her story, the same
fear.
Sensations was fear.
Right.
So I want to tell people that you don't have to be so afraid of your anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
If you can stop meddling with it,
mm-hmm.
it'll pass. It'll move through you. Just like on the way over here, when I didn't buy into it, I didn't start telling stories about it, I just relaxed.
Right.
And here we are having a wonderful time.
Right.
But if I had bought into it, I would have been anxious and maybe this wouldn't have flowed so well today.
Right.
So people can reach me. I work with people all over the world through Zoom, FaceTime, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You can reach me at carlaroyal.com, Carla with a C, Royal without an E. A lot of people want to put an
R-O-Y-A-L.
E. R-O-Y-A-L.
Uh-huh.
carlaroyal.com.
Uh-huh.
Everything you need to know is there, and
okay.
contact and phone numbers and things like that.
All right. Well, I know you'll be a future guest.
Thank you.
And it was just super fun having the conversation with you.
I loved it, and I appreciate the opportunity.
You're more than welcome.
It's been fun.
Everybody out there, if you needed to contact Carla, it will be up on my website, synergyconnectionradio.com. Usually it comes, it's recorded at 11 a.m. for the program Tampa Bay Radio.net. It has an 11 a.m. Saturday live performance, of course. But then afterwards, it is up on my website and it's archived there. So Carla's show will be available. She will share it with her followers. and all of you can find it there as well. And you know, please share it with people that might be suffering from anxiety and need to know a person that they can contact and work with. Otherwise, have a fabulous weekend, and we'll see you next Saturday at 11 a.m. Make it your best life. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Boomers Forever Young is really making a name for themselves as an exciting nutritional company with products that really work. People from all over the country are starting to take notice. Their whole person approach to health and wellness, combined with their unique array of powerful natural health products, are setting them apart from all the other companies in the nutrition industry. Their customers love the one-on-one free consultations and the results they experience. Sound a little too good to be true? Then go online to boomerboost.com today and sign up for a free consultation with a product specialist, or just give us a call at 1-800-861-4609. Again, that's boomerboost.com, or call 1-800-861-4609 to join the thousands already experiencing the benefits of Boomers Forever Young products.